got you shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank, word to Chris Hanks. Before to put it all together, this is big thanks. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016, like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results match
ever. Welcome back to the Shrimp Tank, brought to you live here at Business Radio X Networks in Sandy Springs, where we interview the best and brightest business owners in the state of Georgia about the do's and don'ts of starting, growing, and creating a successful business. The Shrimp Tank will also bring you live pitches of new business ideas from young entrepreneurs across the state of Georgia, preferably KSU, and we're going to see if their ideas sink or swim in the tank. My name is Lee Heisen. I'm your co-host with Chris Hanks. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent, Lee. That's I'm wonderful. Doing great because we're doing great things.
We are doing great things. And we have Joey Roos from do. KSU here.
That's
Joey,
right.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here as always.
I'm bringing you in, Joey, because next week, as we talk about the pitches from the students, next week it'll be a student-centric show. Mm-hmm. We're going to have at least 3 to 4 students pitching their ideas to the tank to see if they're going to sink or swim. Joey, will you be participating?
I certainly hope so if I get that opportunity.
Yeah. So Joey, and as long as Joey brings it, because Joey is going to be among the very first graduating class of the only degree in entrepreneurship in the state of Georgia. So
I'm
assuming you get through
it.
My class this
semester.
That's
right. Yeah. 3 more semesters. Right.
So for those listeners out there that have been listening, or maybe this might be your first episode, KSU is the only and first school in the state of Georgia with a degree in entrepreneurship. Chris was the executive director for 9 years at UGA. It took him less than a year and a half, and you had received the degree, Chris, and now you are a leader in the entrepreneurship world, starting with Georgia.
So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, to lead students in entrepreneurship, lead educators on how do you transform students through using entrepreneurship. And then by being surrounded by the absolute best entrepreneurs in the Southeast, we take those best practices of these best business owners and help other business owners get farther faster than they ever thought possible.
Well, so Chris, you know, I feel a lot smarter from today's board meeting.
Do you feel smarter?
Yeah,
in what
I was
way
around
20.
Well, I was surrounded by 25 of
25,
our board members.
Absolutely. No, we've got a killer board.
They were the best and the brightest that I've been around in some time. Talk a little about your student body. Last year being your first year, this is now your official second year.
Official second
you know,
year.
It sounds as though you're full. Your classes are full already at 100 right now. You had a problem last year because people didn't even know about it. What's happening with the momentum where your classes are full? You have a trip coming up in the next few weeks. Give us a little background on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, KSU with the publicity we've been getting is positioned now as the destination for people who are serious about entrepreneurship. So we're starting to attract students and there's starting to be more and more demand for classes. And we're doing a lot of unique things in keeping up with that demand because, you know, I mean, any entrepreneur listening to this knows that, you know, okay, I took a series of classes and I made C or better. It does not make me an entrepreneur. So how do you sort of infuse an entrepreneurial mindset and spirit in students? And so for example, I mean, there's many things that we do. It's very experiential. There's no tests, no Scantron bubbles, no number two pencils. We are in February taking the class and we're going to spend Friday through Sunday together in a retreat. And we're going to go deep with them and we're going to challenge them. We're going to push them outside comfort zones. And whether or not they end up working for themselves or for somebody else, they're going to be better versions of themselves.
Chris, how illegal is that?
Yeah, it might be. I don't know.
Okay,
I'm going to intentionally not check into that, so that way I can always claim ignorance.
It's always better to do it than ask for an apology and later.
Exactly.
Yeah, talk about how we make it count. How, as you said, you make it marketable. We discussed that this morning, you know, how you actually referenced and you jumped into your student voice earlier when you said, hey, what do I do here? Can you kind of jump into your Kermit the Frog student voice?
Kermit, I didn't, now I'm self-conscious of it. I didn't know I had a Kermit the Frog student voice. Do I, Joey? Do I fall into that in class?
I mean, I didn't make that connection. As long as you wasn't impersonating me this morning.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
But you were giving an example this morning that was really profound about students and understanding the classes they're taking.
So one of the things that we're doing is by testing, you know, you can't test mindset, and it's mindset over skill set. So what do you do? So one of the things that we're doing, for example, is we're making the students all do an experience portfolio based upon what they've done, not necessarily what they've memorized. You know, action trumps everything in entrepreneurship. You know, when you're an entrepreneur, you act, you learn, and build in that order. And so having students present an experience portfolio so they can demonstrate experiences versus, you know, here's the series of classes I took and I was able to pass them, we think will differentiate our students in the marketplace.
Wonderful. Well, you know, another hot topic before we bring our guests in, which are, it's going to be really intriguing. I'm looking forward to the show, and you'll find out soon enough where we bring our guests in, is our KSU 100. We talk about it. It's actually happening. It was a big topic of discussion. The KSU 100 is, it's a combination of The Voice meets The Apprentice. Is that correct?
Shark Tank.
Shark Tank and The Apprentice, yeah, and The Voice. Right. It's all kind of the same.
Exactly.
The top 100 students pitch their ideas. There's a grand prize of $100,000 at the end of it. Garrett Jacobs, who's doing well, and he's leaving the hospital today. Garrett, good wishes out there for you.
Yeah. No, I went to go see him Saturday in the hospital, so
wonderful.
I'm hoping he's doing better.
Garrett won last year's competition with his business, and what'll happen is the 100 applicants will get knocked down to 50 from their video submissions. Then those 50 will present to the board of judges over the next few weeks into, I think it's an April timeframe,
yes,
when we will then crown, at about 10 students, they will each get mentors at that point to mentor them for their pitches. And then we will crown the winner. I was fortunate enough to be involved in that last year.
Yeah, you won last year.
We did win.
You were the one who drove the winner, Garrett Jacobs.
I'm going to say we won. Garrett and I won, which is wonderful. But this year, we're going to have close to 130 submissions with your class included.
Yeah, but you know, people are gunning for you though.
Oh,
you
know, I know that.
Yeah, because you not only did mentor the winner last year, but the in-class version of KSU Top 100 we did last semester, your person that you worked with won that.
Allie Farnham.
So you are undefeated.
Yeah, that's
true. You
are
the reigning champion.
I will make an announcement to the board members that are listening. I definitely would hope that I don't win again because you don't want to listen to me for the next year.
Yeah, you win this one. That's, you know, that.
Yeah, we might drop the mic and stop mentoring
at
that
point. That's amazing. You may have to retire your jersey.
Well, before I bring our guest on, I have a really interesting topic. Joey, you know, you've been a part of this for the past year and a half. Chris, you have as well. What if I told you, and what if I pitched you an idea with the name The Boring Company? Do I fall asleep? Would that be something you'd be interested in if I said The Boring Company? Would that be something that you would be curious or lose interest in?
Well, I think part of that would depend on the logo and the graphics and, of course, the story behind it that you can present. But in today's world, everyone is trying to take the attention, and there's so many people grappling for the online presence and the media attention. So if you kind of do a little reverse psychology, maybe The Boring Company would work.
Chris,
I don't know.
Maybe. Is that where you're going? Is it like calling a fat guy slim? Is that, you know, The Boring Company? We're far from it.
It's a really good analogy. I'll tell you, our producer Ryan figured it out. Did you know that in Atlanta, Spaghetti Junction is considered now the worst bottleneck in the country?
I believe it.
Atlanta, and specifically where northbound Interstate 85 intersects with 285, is considered the worst bottleneck. Well, you know, when I tend to speak, because I have a technology business, I tend to read a lot about Elon Musk. You know what Elon does.
Yeah, right.
Elon has actually opened a company called The Boring Company. He was driving through traffic many, many months ago. He said, you know, I can solve that problem just like I've solved bringing spaceships back to Earth without having to rebuild a new spaceship. He is revolutionizing the car industry. He says, if I can bore underground, if I can bore 30 different levels underground, I can revolutionize the traffic situation in this country. The price per mile to bore used to be cost prohibitive for that. It is now changing, and Elon is on the front end of that. What are your thoughts on that?
Wow, that sounds pretty compelling. You know, like, I mean, a very entrepreneurial attitude, right? You know, it's as we say, Joey, the vanilla ice approach to entrepreneurship. You know, if there's a problem,
yo, I'll solve it.
Thank you for finishing that out.
No problem, Chris.
You don't even get that reference, though, do you?
I don't believe
Joey doesn't. He has no idea.
He watches Vanilla Ice on the home construction project. that's what Joey watches. Well,
don't worry, Joey. We're early in the semester. You will be exposed later on.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Joey can start styling his hair that way. That's a whole different topic. Speaking of cars, speaking of traffic on the highway and cars, I'm very, very pleased to bring our guests in. It's a little dynamic here with different businesses. But Tony and Robin Marzullo, hey, welcome to the show, Tony.
Glad to be here.
Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thanks for having us.
So, you know, I want to jump into your businesses. You both, you know, married couple, running businesses together, running them individually. You know, Tony is the owner of Gas Motor Cars, Inc., And Robin is also the owner of Sandy Springs Gun Club and the Norcross Gun Club. There's such a diversity there. We talked about cars, Tony. Tell us your background. How exactly, I think we were talking earlier and you mentioned you started your business out of your driveway. And you're a local, if I'm incorrect.
Correct.
You know, one of the few in the proud. Stay proud about this. Tony, give us your background a little bit.
Well, I'm native Atlantan. I was born and raised in Marietta, Georgia. Went to undergrad college, University of Florida in Gainesville. And the whole time I was in college, I actually wanted to be a lobbyist and work in D.C. So I applied to a bunch of law schools and decided that I just couldn't do three more years of school because I was just ready to go out and make money. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So I got a job. I had a political science and a history degree from University of Florida. So that means you can either bartend, sell cars, or be a substitute teacher at a public school. Yes. So I loved cars. I grew up just a car nut. My dad and my brother were both big car enthusiasts. I was a horrible athlete. So when all my friends were learning all the facts and figures of every athlete, professional that played every position on every team and what their stats were, I was memorizing stats and statistics on cars and reading about cars constantly. I had a subscription to every single trade publication, Motor Trend, Auto Trade, Auto Week, Road and Track, you name it. So, which I still do. I still read that stuff constantly. So it's like just a habit that never died. So I got a job selling retail. I worked at a big, you know, big box dealership like you would see on Peachtree Industrial or Cobb Parkway or up on Highway 9 in Alpharetta. And I did that for 2 years. And to be honest, without coming across as really cocky and arrogant, I was really, really good at it. Yeah. So instead of going back to school to get a professional degree, I just said, I'll just stick with this. It's fun. I'm enjoying it. And I happen to be good at it. And when you're good at something, you tend to be successful at it. So I went from a newbie to a top salesperson within 90 days. So I loved it. And I love the aspect of working with people. I loved that I was basically turning my hobby into a career. I was able to utilize, you know, what was once considered useless information about all different kinds of cars. And I was able to use that information to educate customers and help them buy a car, not just sell them a car. I was actually able to help them buy a car.
The story's good, but what happens when you say, I've been really successful, I'm good? And we've talked about this on the show. Entrepreneurs, you know, when they're working at something they enjoy, it's almost not work. So working the hours you want to work, you can work all the time because it's really a hobby. You're enjoying yourself. It'd be nice to make some money with it, but you're enjoying yourself. You know, for listeners out there and entrepreneurs, students and young entrepreneurs, you were working somewhere. Give us a little more detail about how you transitioned to say, I'm leaving this job and I'm going to put a sign on my driveway and start selling cars.
So you made a point of, you know, when you're doing what you love, it's not really work. But when you're doing what you love and you're working 90 plus hours a week and you're sharing 60% of the profits with the owner of the dealership or of the business, it definitely gives you a little bit different mindset about how much you love what you do. So I knew after about 2 years that I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to work for myself. I didn't want to have to ask permission to go out of town for a weekend with my wife. I didn't want to have to ask permission to go to lunch. I wanted to be able to do what I wanted to do. At the same time, while I was in retail, we were selling one brand. So I was basically only able to sell what I had on the lot to sell. And for me, if I wasn't passionate about this one specific product, I would objectively kind of help people pick something else. If they came in to see us, you know, prime example, which my wife brought up pre-show, you know, I had a Atlanta Hawks player that came in to see me. This was actually kind of what, to answer your question, what really got me started. And he came in with his 16-year-old son, and he looked at a used Corvette that we had. And he said, this is the car he wants. I want to get him this car. And I said, I have nothing to do with this transaction. I will not help sell you this car. I won't facilitate this transaction because this is just a bad idea. And he said, what do you mean? I said, you know, giving a kid a 405 horsepower Corvette Z06 would be, might as well just buy him a casket, a tombstone in the same day. It's just not a good idea. And he was first taken aback by it, and they left. He called back the next morning. He said, okay, I thought about what you said, and I want you to help me get him the right car.
That's wonderful.
So what should I get them? Where should I get it from? How much should I pay for? Oh, and by the way, I'm too busy to do any of this. I want you to go do it for me. And that's how we got started. So I started with this one customer and I helped facilitate a car for his 16-year-old. And I knew then and there that there was a need for somebody who could objectively go out and quote unquote help people buy cars. And that's how we got started.
Objectively, but at the same time, it sounds like you're giving an extra Ritz-Carlton, St. Regis type of service where you're taking the next few steps after.
It was very concierge at the time. We got started as basically an auto consultant, auto concierge.
So what's the downside of turning a hobby into a business?
It makes your hobby less fun. To be honest, I mean, I'm lucky. I do truly, truly love what I do when I go to work now. You know, I've been doing it 15 plus years. So the novelty does wear off when you are putting in all the hours and you're around, you know, car. If you love cars, you're going to be around cars all the time. I mean, the same thing, you know, pizza could be your favorite meal, but if you eat it every night, you're eventually just going to get sick of it. Yeah. Luckily, you know, we've grown and I've made great contacts and I have managed to expand the business and evolve the business into a, you know, actual licensed auto dealer, which gives us a lot more latitude and longitude to do different things, which makes the business more exciting. I mean, every day we get some sort of new opportunity that is auto related. We meet new people. We deal with all kinds of different customers. We deal with people, you know, that are hourly employees and school teachers up to CEOs and CFOs of Fortune 10 companies and athletes and celebrities and just everybody. And it's just exciting. You don't know who's going to walk through the door that day. That's what keeps it exciting and keeps it fun. The car stuff is not as exciting as it used to be. I have to admit, it's not as great because I'm doing it every day, but it's the people you get to interact with is what kind of makes me coming back for more, makes me think that this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It's every day is an adventure and I have fun.
Nice. So, Tony, you talked earlier about having to work 90-hour work weeks when you were getting started. So, as an entrepreneur, how do you define and find that work-life balance?
I was scared you were going to answer that question. So, you have to love to work. If you're going to be, you know, if this is an advice response, you have to love work. You have to treat it as if in any job, as if it's your own business and you're going to get out of it what you put into it. So therefore, if you want to work the bare minimum, if you are a business owner and you want to go in at 9 and leave at 4:59 every day, you're going to find yourself with a lot of challenges down the road. My experience is you put in the long hours and the hard work and there is no balance. It's all work. It's all work until you get to business going. You have no quality of life until you've worked to earn that quality of life. So if it does require you to work 90 hours a week for the first 3 or 4 years to get the business up and running, hence you're going to have less of a failure rate by putting in the hard work initially. And then once it's up and running, you can afford yourself time to take off and you can give yourself boundaries. You can say, look, every night at 7 o'clock, I'm going to turn my phone off. And I refuse to work Sundays ever again. But you have to work your ass off to get to that point. It's not just going to happen putting in bare minimums.
Yeah. And that takes many years. Is that right, Tony? I mean, these standards you've set about, I'm going to turn my phone off, I'm going to do Sundays, that's taken many, many years of not living like that.
15 years.
15 years. Yeah, 15 so for, years. Again, aspiring entrepreneurs, students out there, you know, this is not a millennial, I get to work my 6 hours a day and I get all my weekends off and I can do what I want to do. And listen, we're going to take a commercial break real quick. When we come back, I want to bring probably the most important person in the room on the show, Robin, Tony's wife. And I want to have the question answered. Why is a hobby hard to convert it into a job? I think I'm going to get a great answer from Robin on that.
In business, it's either time or money. How much money does your business lose if your network is down for a day? How much time do your employees waste trying to fix computer issues? At Savant, we have the experts that make your network work simply and your company run more efficiently. Max PCs, mobile solutions, no problem. Savant's battery life never ends. Call 770-438-6240 today.
Thank you, Ryan. Welcome back to the Shrimp Tank here, guys. Brought to you every Thursday from 11:30 to 12:30. You can download us on iTunes or you can jump on the website shrimptankpodcast.com. My name is Lee Heisman. I'm here with your co-host, Chris Hanks, the executive director of the KSU Entrepreneurship Center, and our KSU Student of the Week, Joey. Thank you, Joey. So bringing back, we're going to invite Robin onto the show. Robin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
As we mentioned, Robin owns 2 gun clubs in the area. And Robin, you know, you talked a little bit, and as we were talking prior, about turning a hobby into a job. Your husband says he was able to do that. You say it's real difficult because you're the operational person behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, when I got started in with the gun ranges, that wasn't my hobby. So I think I came from a totally different background direction. But I think listening to that question and listening to Tony answer it is interesting because it is his hobby. And I've been able to see how it's gone from a hobby to, you know, something that is successful, a successful business, and provides for your family. And I actually met Tony by test driving a car. And so,
hey, Tony, you know, so you recommend meeting your future wife by running your, working your job and owning a business that way?
If you sell hot cars, you'll meet hot women.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, for us, knowing that for him specifically, there was a niche and we kind of went with it. We weren't married. We didn't have responsibilities and said, you know, let's try this. Let's see what's out there. Taking that first step and taking that chance, I think when you're starting your own business, being an entrepreneur, putting your hands in multiple areas, I think it's scary and there's a lot of room for rejection and failure and disappointment. But ultimately that, you know, the more of that you have, the more success I think you ultimately get in return. So it is a lot of hard work. But as far as a hobby goes, I mean, it's just funny because I always loved cars and people always say, oh, you always drive such fun cars and whatnot. And I laugh because I'm like, they're not that exciting anymore. They pay our bills. So it's, you know, it's fun. But I think there comes a time where you have to evaluate, you know, a hobby is great. And when you work at your hobby all the time, that's great. But at some point you have to be able to separate, okay, am I working all this time to be successful? And you know, successful as far as monetary, I understand success is measured in multiple areas.
Sure.
But you do get to that point where, okay, is this successful and will it, you know, last me for how long? Or do I need to turn it back into a hobby? Because,
sure,
you know, you kind of have to look at that perspective more often than just having a career, if that makes sense.
Well, you brought up a great point, and we talk about it all the time. You know, a lot of the young entrepreneurs that are out there taking your class, Chris, and taking your courses, you know, they don't see the 999 lunches that turn out to be nothing, or the 999 meetings or the events that you attend that turn out to be nothing. They see the one home run where you made a sale, or someone may see the success. And we talk about that all the time of the hidden sweat and energy that's put behind it. You know, we also talk, and your husband, Tony, talked about you prior to the show saying that, you know, Robin is really an execution person, a logistical person. She gets a job done. She could run any business. And, you know, in addition to talking about Tony's hobby, I want to hear a little more about guns. You're a woman. You own two gun, Sandy Springs Gun Club, and you have the Norcross Gun Club. It's just the dichotomy of that. Explain a little more detail of how you got into that. How did you take that over? I mean, there's a lot to happen for that to occur.
Yeah. So, long story short, I was a mortgage broker after college, and I did that for a little while, and I enjoyed it, but ended up going to work with my family. I went there temporary, trying to decide what I was going to do. I grew up in a family who was in commercial real estate forever, very entrepreneurial family, actually, and did that for a while. And my sister and my father actually are the ones who kind of came up with doing the gun range thing. My sister had been showing space to someone, you know, several years prior to that and asked what they were looking for. And they had mentioned a gun range and nothing ever happened from it. She kept thinking about it and they went looking to buy a gun range. And growing up in commercial real estate, they didn't find one. And she said, well, why are we looking? Why don't we just build our own? Growing up, I'm a native Atlantan as well. And we realized there was a need at first in Sandy Springs. So they decided to do the research and build it. And during that process, at some point, I got involved. And then, you know, 6 years later, it's my sister and I who are the main partners in the two businesses.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So a lot of people subscribe to the sort of the philosophy that, hey, I've got to know everything about this business before I start it. But yet you're not a gun enthusiast and then you own a gun club. So what advice do you have for people who, you know, if they're choosing between following something that they know a lot about versus, hey, here's an opportunity and I'm going to seize that opportunity?
I guess I'd look at it twofold. Number one is, if you know, sometimes I think Tony might be a different situation, but or have gone, you know, it worked out well for him. But I think sometimes when you know too much about something, I think you could run into a situation where you can't see the forest through the trees.
Yeah.
Because you feel that you're already the expert. And so, you know, the additional education or the research may be something that you're just not thinking about because this is something you already enjoy. You like it. So, you know, you already kind of feel yourself as the expert, if you will. I think for us in this situation, I wasn't a gun enthusiast, but I would say research. I think it's, for me, I'm the type of person, it's about the opportunity. If something comes to my head or my sister's head, or, you know, I grew up in a family really where you kind of think of this idea, whether you're driving in the car or something happens and it makes you think of a need or a want, or I wish I had this, or where can I go do this? And it's not available around us. You know, you just get these thoughts. And we always grew up around the table saying, okay, that's a good idea, or this is not a good idea, but constantly throwing out ideas and seeing how many holes we could put into it. And at the end of the day, if the paper was still standing, even if there were a lot of holes, was it worth continuing on? And I think research, 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 and then being open-minded. You've got, you know, no matter how much you research something, you're always going to run into a situation where, okay, I did it this way, it didn't work, so I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board. So being open-minded, you know, being open to other people's perspectives or opinions and listening to what other people have to say and following your gut at the same time. I think if you have a passion, no matter it's a hobby or a passion or wanting to be an entrepreneur or putting your hands in multiple different businesses, I think the biggest failure is not trying.
Well, see, it sounds like you would go back to your family, your sister, you mentioned your father.
Yeah.
You know, were they a type of board of advisors? What we advise a lot for young entrepreneurs is, you know, to find a circle of highly educated business people, CEOs. Are they kind of your board of advisors when you go back to ask questions to?
Absolutely. I think, you know, my sister and I are really lucky because we grew up in a family where, like I said, you put every idea on the table, no matter how silly it may sound. But every once in a while, it's the silly ones actually, you know, that stick. I mean, no one ever thought we would own a gun range. And I'm glad we took that chance. And I think that it's having an advisor. It's, you know, I always say you have to hire people who are a little bit smarter than yourself, because I can't be an expert in everything. You know, my expertise is I like numbers and I love operations. I like being able to go into a business and look at the big picture and say, okay, but where are we really struggling, or where are you really struggling, or, you know, where can we make it better and make it more of a cohesive unit? That's my passion, if you will. And I think that kind of, for me, that passion could be displayed on multiple levels in regards to different businesses. I don't think it has to be one specific area, but I think it's really important that you turn to people who are either smarter than you or who have don't let your pride get in the way, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
That's nice.
And truthfully, go around people who you trust. That's first and foremost. Just because someone's successful doesn't mean they got to the top with the same morals and values that you may have, because, you know, I'm a big fan or believer in karma. And I think, you know, just surround yourself with smart people and people that you trust.
Nice. So Robin, you and Tony both have really amazing and unique stories of how you got into entrepreneurship. And I think that's part of the beauty of it, is that it can play out in different ways for different people. And something that Professor Hanks had us do last week in class was define entrepreneurship, which is a lot harder than it sounds, right? It's kind of a nebulous word. So I wanted to get your opinion. How would you define, from your experience, entrepreneurship?
Well, so that's interesting, because I think there's a really big difference between being self-employed and being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I think many people who are self-employed consider themselves an entrepreneur. And I think that could be the case sometimes, but that's, in my opinion, not the same thing. You know, self-employed sounds to me like you have a knack for something, or your own business and you're running it and you work for yourself. And essentially, you kind of want the whole piece of the pie. To me, an entrepreneur is someone who can say, okay, I don't want to just have one company, or I don't want to just be part of one organization. I want to be part of multiple things and diversifying themselves, because they have the opportunity. One might be successful, one might not do as well. And to me, it's more maybe having a little piece of the pie, but having multiple pieces of multiple pies, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean by that? Like,
I think so.
You can have, being an entrepreneur is not just one company. I mean, I look at it as being involved in multiple different companies and sharing that wealth across the board and being able to diversify yourself.
That's real nice, Robin. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we come back from our commercial break, guys, we're going to find out if Robin or Tony think, are they entrepreneurs or are they small business owners? I'm really curious of your guys' opinion on each other. And when we return, we're going to hit our plead the fifth section, which is my best section. I get to watch Chris, the nicest guy I know, come out with the fangs. So hold on to your seats when we come back from our commercial break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Business Radio X and Radio in My Booth. Would you like to have live radio at your next trade show, conference, or expo? Well, now you can with Business Radio X and Radio in My Booth, engaging a target audience on location. To learn more about having live radio at your next trade show, conference, expo, or event, go to radioinmybooth.com. That's radioinmybooth.com.
Thank you, Ryan. And we're back here live 11:30 to 12:30 every Thursday. You can download us on iTunes or hit us on shrimptankpodcast.com. So we left the break and Robin brought up an amazing point that she finds is the difference between a small business owner and an entrepreneur. Tony, let's get you back in here into the swing of things. Are you an entrepreneur or a small business owner?
I would consider myself an entrepreneur. In my definition, back to the question before the break is, you know, it's risk and reward. I think that's the true entrepreneur. I think there's no definitive explanation, no definitive definition of which is which, because they all have a lot of moving parts. And kind of what Robin had said earlier, I think being an entrepreneur is being willing to diversify yourself and always looking for the next best thing or the next great idea. And you really want to truly grow and expand and enjoy it. Some people could possibly disagree. I think a lot of just a small business owner is somebody who's just going in, it's set up that they're going to get a distribution or a check every week. And at age 62, they're going to retire and get rid of it. I live what I do. So I think somebody who lives what they do is more an entrepreneur than a business owner.
Very fair. Very, very fair. Well, I'm going to jump into the plea, the fifth. I'll throw the first one out there, make it easy. It's low-hanging fruit. Tony, who would you classify as your most hated competitor in town?
You know, I can't say it by name, but in our industry, the car business by nature and probably globally is not exactly the most respected industry. It may be a notch or two above an attorney and maybe two or three notches above an insurance salesperson. So the people I truly hate that are competition are the people that do the job dishonestly.
Is it like a bad Seinfeld episode with Putty when he had the undercoating?
Correct.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, there's a right way and a wrong way of doing it. And kind of what Robin said earlier, it is all about karma, doing things the right way, treating people the right way, selling good product, and doing it honest and above board, no hidden issues with the cars, no hidden fees, no misrepresentation of anything. That's the way I do it. There are people in town that I truly hate, that I love seeing get in trouble for doing it. You know, they do a Channel 5 investigative reporting. When I watch the news and I see a competitor is under investigation for defrauding somebody, and these are people, you know, a car for a lot of people is a need. You know, it's not like somebody's going to go out and buy a Toyota Camry because it's their dream car. They're going to buy a Toyota Camry because that's their way they're going to get to work to provide for their family. So when you have my competitors that will sell something that's going to last that person 2 weeks, knowing it was only going to last them 2 weeks, hence ripping them off, I love to see that type of competitor.
Very fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm a little bit nervous asking this one first question on the plead the fifth, but I'm curious, Robin, from your perspective, what's Tony's biggest weakness as a business owner? And I was curious, Tony, what you think Robin's biggest weakness
again,
as a
the
business
fangs,
owner is.
The fangs are...
But you're welcome to plead the fifth.
And then Chris gets the point, and we keep a challenge. Don't do it. Answer the question.
I think sometimes for Tony, again, it goes kind of back to the, you can't see the forest through the trees. I think Tony is such an expert in his field. I like to know details, operations. Tony is a sales guy through and through, and that is by far his biggest strength. And people gravitate towards him, and they love him, and he's so good at what he does. So with that being said, I think the biggest weakness would be taking his business and being able to not make the ultimate success of his business be Tony Marzullo. Being able to, you know, I feel like his business at this point is him. And I think that's really, really hard because that's a lot of responsibility. So if if...
And that's a logistical person talking. I'm a logistical person. I'm completely on board with you. It's just the stability and the redundancy of his business.
Well, I think he's just so great at what he does. And so his customers want to deal with him, and he has a great staff, and they love his staff. And probably most of the time, they love his staff more than him. But I think it's taking it from this, you know, you can reach that level of success, and you want to make sure that if you're not there, that someone else can be able to take everything you've built and continue it on that same growth level or keep it, you know, sustained. And I think that's a really hard thing to do.
And that's hard for any entrepreneur.
Right.
Yeah. How do you, you know, the thing that you're originally good at, how do you scale and get the business and the systems delivering the same value that you created from the beginning?
So well, getting your business where you want it so that then you can do something else at the same time. That's like that taking that step is such a hard, you know, growing a business that you're at day in and day out is one thing, but then getting your business where it's, you know, self, you know, it works for itself and it can, you know, continues to sustain itself within reason and to be able to go on to kind of the next thing and take more of that overview approach is a really hard step, I think, for anyone to take.
Tony, what do you say? Is this your plead the fifth right here?
Yeah.
I would preface the plead the fifth with, I think she's pretty much great at all aspects. Okay,
just then don't use it. Don't plead the fifth part. Go for it.
There's nothing I can be critical of. I mean,
I can tell you what he would say.
She and her sister were
too kind.
Were put into a business that they knew nothing about, and they've grown it in 7 years to a very successful business. So there's not really anything I can criticize.
Nice. That was very smart, Chris. That was brilliant of you. Well played, Chris. Well played. Joey, let's get a plead the fifth.
Yeah, so for both of y'all, what are some daily habits that contribute to your success? Either of you can go first, yeah.
I wake up, I go to bed focused on what I'm going to do in the morning, and then I wake up knowing exactly what I need to get done. So, you know, from advice perspective to any potential entrepreneurs. I mean, there's people that think about things and then people that do things. You have to be a doer to be successful in any business. And I think that's what I do. I think about something. It could be my ADD, but I execute it almost instantaneously. I don't do a ton of research before I do something. Sometimes it pans out that it helps me and sometimes it may hurt me. But at the same time, you know, my routine is just to get task management, just to get things done every day, not procrastinate, put things off. I just like to get them done.
Yeah, love it. Like Professor Hanks said, act, learn, build, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joey. You are getting an A for the day.
Yes.
Absolutely.
All right, cool.
Yes, very nice.
I would say from a little bit of a different approach, you know, having two people in the family who are trying to grow their businesses and you know, raise a family. And it kind of goes back to your question, I think, earlier. You had asked Tony how about balance. And I think that success, you know, we're talking about all this hard work and all the hours that you have to put in, but you also have to be able to take a step back, remember what's important. And so for us, you know, we can get very caught up in our day-to-day and lose sight of everything else. And I think sometimes that can lend to problems, you know, essentially in your own business, meaning, you know, it's easy if you're working for yourself and you're trying to reach that goal to never stop. But it's always important, I think, to take a step back and to, you know, remember to pick up the phone and to call your spouse and to, you know, Tony's much better at that than I am, but to not forget the important things about life and family and everything else that you have going on, because success is great, but it really doesn't mean much if you, you know, have spent all your time and energy and every waking moment on what you're trying to accomplish and not enjoying or remembering what's happening right in front of you. Because a lot of those moments that are happening, if you can take a step back and be present, can make you much more successful, I believe. I think we forget
that's really good.
You know.
Love it. See, Joey, sometimes you could be so busy making a living that you lose life.
Mm. Oh, wow. My head just, I plead the fifth. So for both of you again, hopefully I can get a plead the fifth here. What would you consider thus far in your professional career your biggest disappointment? Tony's
pointing
at
to me. Does that mean I'm your disappointment?
You're first. I went first last time.
Ladies first.
In my professional career, I think not trusting my gut and not being stronger. I think sometimes you don't want to ruffle the feathers. I think that there have been times I should have put my foot down I think I'm too nice sometimes. I mean, I don't know if I'm nice, but I guess giving someone the second chance, the third chance, or getting too nervous that I'm going to upset someone or hurt their feelings.
Sure.
And I think you make decisions, you know, in that way. And it gets to a point where you need to stand up for what you believe and not let people push you around. And I think that is my biggest disappointment in myself, is not maybe trusting my gut instinct and believing in myself
more.
But
have you gotten better over the past few years?
Oh, I think I've definitely gotten a tougher skin. That's for sure. I try not to take things as personal, but I think it's really, you know, that can make ultimately lead sometimes to not always making the best decision because you're worried about what someone else thinks.
Fair.
And so it's, you know, trying to be respectful and being open-minded, but putting your foot down and being strong about what you believe in.
Excellent. Biggest disappointment, Tony?
I look at disappointments and mistakes as kind of chapters in a book of learning. So, you know, I try to look at every disappointment and turn it into something like, what did I do wrong and how could I not do this again? So I have hundreds of them. You know, there's hundreds of...
What was your biggest?
The biggest, I had a client. I mean, it's one that's just been standing out for years that I didn't... I guess it goes back to the old saying, don't judge a book by its cover. So I didn't take this one particular client seriously, and this is on the radio. I can't say who it was. Let's just say he called me about a Ferrari I was selling, and he wanted to come drive it for the day, and I told him no. And that particular client is one of the wealthiest and one of the biggest car collectors in the state of Georgia. Oh, okay. And I got a call from a competitor about 3 days later, asked me, saying, hey, do you still have that yellow Ferrari in stock? We have a guy here that wanted to come drive it the other day, and you told him no. Well, he just bought 6 cars from us, and we want to buy that car from you and resell it to him. Goodness. So, what you took away from it is now you don't ever judge a book by its cover. I didn't take the customer seriously. This was a long time ago. This was probably 10 years ago, but it resonates every day I think about it.
Wow.
Yeah. What if I would have, let him drive it, how much revenue would I have gotten out of him in the last 10-year relationship?
Yeah, yes, the long-term.
So that would probably be my biggest mistake.
Chris, one more plead the fifth.
Okay, so there's a lot of advice that you read or hear about that goes along with entrepreneurship. What popular advice do you disagree with?
Personally, I think that it's not that it's advice that I don't agree with, but I think that there's a misconception sometimes when people talk about an entrepreneur and that, you know, oh, they're getting into this business or that business or, you know, constantly trying, that makes them such a great entrepreneur because they're so diversified, if you will. But I think sometimes you can be involved in multiple things, but you have to be patient and you still have to give the hard work. So that, you know, I think people honestly sometimes think it's like, oh, that's so cool because he's so successful and he's, you know, so involved in so many things. And I think that you can only give so much energy and attention to so many things, yeah, if that makes sense.
Right.
That I personally sometimes look at that as a maybe someone that's not so diverse, but more of a get rich quick, you know, looking for the next best thing. And again, the next best thing could be there, but you've got to use you've got to actually focus on something long enough and give it some energy and some attention in order to make it successful. So I think maybe it's not advice, but, you know, you hear that word diversify in a lot of different, you know, areas when people talk about things, but especially in entrepreneurship, you know, I've heard that a lot. And I think that's you got to be really careful. There's a real fine line there. What does that mean? You know, because you spread yourself so thin or you're so waiting for the next best thing. Ultimately, you've got a lot of little things that aren't doing anything, if that makes any sense. So I think, you know, scale that down a little bit and you should be okay.
Tony, what do you say?
If I had to listen to what I've heard other people say to aspiring entrepreneurs, you know, one thing that kind of resonates, and we talked about earlier in the show, is the whole, you know, the balance between quality of life and work, you know, and I can't stand it when I have, you know, I hear people, you know, come into my office saying, well, I've got this new job I'm going to get into. I'm going to sell X, Y, and Z. And I'm told I only have to work 20 hours a week. And I'm told I'm going to have Saturdays off. And I'm told that I'm going to be able to travel and do this. I mean, I think that's a big misconception if you're going to be starting any new business. I think you do have to live and breathe that business.
Very fair.
There's no doing it halfway. I think it's 100% or don't do it at all.
You're in with both feet or you're out. That's it. Go big or go home. We know that to be the theory here that we've had on the Shrimp Tank. So guys, if someone wants to get in touch with you, someone wants to come to your gun range, can you give some information? How would they get in touch with you? Website, and same for you as well, Tony? Robin, you go first?
Absolutely. I mean, we have two locations, one's in Sandy Springs and one's in Norcross off of Medlock Ridge and Peachtree Industrial, and it's open to the public. And the best way to find out more about us is to go to our website at www.myshootingrange.com. Both sites are listed on there, and you can get all the rates and information about memberships and rentals and training. Everything's listed there.
Well, there's no question, after meeting you, I can only imagine, I haven't been to your gun ranges, how organized and structured they are. So that will be definitely the next range I go to. Tony, tell us how we get in touch with you at Gas Motor Cars Incorporated.
Well, Gas Motor Cars is located right off of Cobb Parkway in Marietta, right near the new Braves Stadium. And our website is www.gasmotorcars.com. There's an S on the end. We're also on Facebook as well. And come see us anytime, especially car enthusiasts. You'll love to see our shop. It's kind of like a car candy store.
That's wonderful. Without the calories. Listen, I want to thank Tony and Robin Marzullo for coming on the show. It's been a lot of great information. Next week, our student-centric show. Joey, I'm expecting you to put up big numbers and to hopefully show the other students who the boss is in the room.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure. I'll see what I can
do. Yeah, I hope that's going to be the case. And again, thank you for listening to The Shrimp Tank this week. We'll see you next week.
I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.